Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Good evening and welcome to the Chill Brands Investor Event. We're pleased to have with us today Callum Summerton, CEO of Chill Brands. Welcome, Callum.
Hi, Phil. Kevin, it's good to be with you again.
Very good. Before we begin with the Q&A session, we'd like to hear from you about any recent updates and progress that Chill Brands has made since our last communication. Please provide us with an overview of the company's recent events and milestones.
Yeah, I suppose it's been quite a big year for Chill already. We've just closed out, obviously, Q1 of the calendar year, and lots happened. You know, we've put 3.1 million aggregates in the bank account from a combined set of investors, both an institutional and also a high net worth. Obviously, you know, more information will come out about that in due course. But yeah, that we're very well capitalized at the moment. But on a more operational level, that's where really the change has occurred. Obviously, we've spoken for a long time about what we can do with the Chill domain, why chill.com is, you know, so important, and why our strategy going forward is very much sort of centered around that domain. So we've added new brands, we've got people like Mad Tasty, we've got Game Changer Patches, we've got Foria, we've got Happy Tuesdays. Obviously, Zoetic is now selling on the UK version of chill.com. That has been a major milestone for us, and we continue to look at additional brands and additional products that we can get going on that domain. But I suppose most crucially, we've very recently launched to the market our new range of nicotine-free vapor products. We're very excited about where that product range alongside our other sort of new projects can go. And, you know, we're seeing great appetite for them as well. So we're just working out the true logistics of selling them across the United States in terms of e-commerce. But yeah, I think we can expect to see good things from that product range as it starts to bed itself into the market, develop product market fit, and also develop a bit of a following, which we're starting to see from pretty much anyone who tries them. They taste great.
Good. Yeah. I mean, it certainly feels like the company's in a different position than it was sort of, you know, 12 to 18 months ago. Do you think that's very much true?
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, you know, what happened with, for instance, the TFN product category was very unfortunate, and it was very unfair. Ultimately, you know, we were a company that was geared up to grow massively into that space, and couldn't do so as a result of what was ultimately lobbyists using an omnibus spending bill, a piece of legislation they knew had to be passed through, to inject, you know, what ultimately was hostile statute. And that prevented growth of the company in that sense. But of course, we've also kind of reimagined what Chill can be and tried to find, you know, a route that will deliver growth for shareholders, growth in terms of, you know, customer counts, products that actually have real legs and a mass market appeal. I think really, you know, Chill is now in a position where we've cleared out a lot of the challenges of the past. And yeah, look, we're on an even playing field now and ready to move forward.
How do you feel in the vote of confidence of all of this cash that's come in at sort of 3.5p, 4p and 8p in terms of the loan note?
Yeah, very grateful, amongst other things. I mean, I think it is a great vote of confidence in the future of the company. It's obviously down to us to execute now. But the key really there is, look, last year when we completed our fundraise, that was at 2p. The company at the time was obviously in a very difficult place, as many companies in our space, in our industry, our peers were. We now, you know, less than 12 months later, have been able to raise money at a significant premium to that raise of last year. And I think that is really a testament to the work that's been put in over the course of the past year, but also the real optimism that remains in the market amongst our existing shareholder base and amongst those who now are starting to see the company as a real sort of turnaround opportunity play. You know, there is genuine belief that chill.com has what it takes to go the distance to make some real money. And of course, again, that comes down to, you know, mid long-term performance and what we can put on the books. But really, it is, again, going back to what I say, we're on an even playing field. It is all to play for, and we've got the products, the site, the plans to do it.
Yeah, before we look at the sort of nicotine-free clean side of the company, if you like. Let's just look at chill.com. We've got, you know, various questions in terms of that. I mean, have we seen sales in terms of all the products that have been launched on chill.com so far?
Yeah, I mean, we're receiving a steady flow of orders from the additional brands that have joined. Look, Mad Tasty is probably the most popular of those. It's obviously got a degree of celebrity appeal. They've got a great following of their own. And they're, you know, we're seeing in the US, customers add the trial packs from Mad Tasty onto their pouch orders, which is great because that's what this entire project, that's what the site is about. It's cross-pollination, it's brand collaboration opportunities. It's the chance to upsell products in a way that makes sense for us, makes sense for the brands that are joining. So we are starting to see traction there. Of course, it's a slow burn as we sort of attract additional traffic to the site. It's a slow burn as we attract additional brands. But really, again, look, the more brands we can get on there, the more products that are there, and then the more people that visit that site, the greater chance there is, simply in a numbers game, that we're going to see volume of sales.
Yeah, one of the questions that was asked, I suppose, alludes to that. How many companies, or are there many companies' products wanting to list on chill.com? And how many products would you anticipate listing in the next 6 to 12 months? Obviously, you cannot know exactly, but if you can give us a ballpark, that would be helpful.
Yeah, of course. I mean, what I can say is that we've got an extremely strong pipeline of companies, big and small and mass market and boutique and artisan, all kinds that want to join chill.com. We're going to have absolutely no problem with finding people who want to be selling their products on this site. We all know its potential, and so do the brands that we're speaking to. It's pretty much a foregone conclusion when we get on the phone to these guys. Look, do you want to sell on chill.com? It's a very simple sales process, because just like with Amazon and the other e-commerce marketplaces, it's just an additional sales channel. We've got plans with brands in the US and the UK. Obviously, we're still working through teething issues in some areas in terms of logistics, in terms of back end, in terms of how we can simplify our onboarding process. And look, that will all come out in the wash. I can't speak to exact volumes of the number of products we're going to have on, but look, we'll have no problem getting those brands on and signed up to join. And I think we'd be very happy if we could get up to 25 by the end of, you know, the end of this quarter, start of the next. But really, to be honest with you, we're targeting hundreds of brands. If we can get hundreds of brands and hundreds of SKUs on here, again, it's a volume game, and it's a volume game that there's no reason why we cannot win.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, Amazon sells everything. So as long as it's in the relaxation genre, if you like, then it can be listed there and sticks by current legislation, obviously, in terms of things that are not supposed to be sold on these things. So one of the questions was, could current future products be tied up with bigger global players, and do the opportunities have any ceiling? Or could the company become over £100 million company again? I think that was two questions, but anyway.
I suppose split those out. In answer to the last question there, could the company become over £100 million company again? Any company with the right performance and the right numbers can become over £100 million. Again, it's all about execution. And I'm not going to put a timeline on that, but you know, I don't think we would be doing ourselves any kind of service if we suggested that we weren't aiming for those kind of numbers. You know, what's the point in doing it if you don't go big? So I suppose in answer to that, yes, that's of course what we would like to see. It would be a benefit to the company and all of our shareholders. In terms of, I suppose, the first question, just to recap that, Kev, was could there be current tie-ups and with bigger global players? Is that what you're saying? And yeah. The answer to that is, look, there's obvious scope with this marketplace for us to, again, see cross-pollination between brands and products, for us to find ways to do brand partnerships, for us to tie ourselves into you know, brands that are currently pulling in much bigger crowds than we do with our own chill products. We've had conversations with some very large, very well-known companies and brands, and we do think that there is that opportunity there. What that will manifest itself as, you'll have to wait and see.
Okay. So I suppose moving on from that question, then we're sort of, okay, the you expect hopefully 2025 different products or different companies online,
brands,
by the middle of the year. So when can we expect to see regular trading updates? and the likes of sell-through rates on those chill.com site, and then also obviously the physical shops. I mean, do we have an updated number of shops that we're in now? Is there any sort of movement that that could sort of exponentially grow? Sorry, that was all added by me.
Yeah, no, all fine. I suppose in terms of the shops, that's an easy one to answer. There's not an update to that figure at the moment. You know, we continue to gain new accounts and we continue to find new venues. You know, the last I spoke along with Antonio to one of our brokers was that we were selling into certain, you know, tattoo parlors and barber shops with the pouches, which is great to see. It's obviously diversification. But again, I think what I would stress here is obviously distribution is very, very important. I think the metric of store count on its own is not a particularly useful one, because ultimately you could have one store selling $1 million worth a year. And that would be, it could be just as good as 100 or 1,000 stores in terms of its numbers. So really it comes down to sales volume, and the only figure that really matters and it all runs to is revenue. And that's what we're trying to build up. I think going back to the sort of a question on when can we provide sort of regular trading updates? Well, in relation to our marketplace and vapes, again, I hope that this is a good enough answer, but we're very much building up our infrastructure. This is almost a startup within a company. They only came into existence, really, aside from the concept, within the last sort of 60 days or so. And it would be wrong of me to come out and promise a trading update now on those areas, because they're still picking up and sort of setting up. And really, you know, for us to come out to the market and say, this is what's happening, this is the trend that we're seeing. Well, look, it's positive, but to go into the de minimis detail there is going to set a false expectation that is going to get people ultimately hurt. But in relation to, you know, what we can do, well, look, we intend as soon as we possibly can to get to a position where we can provide regular, whether that's quarterly or otherwise, updates on the traffic we're seeing on the domain, the other metrics that we see from sell-through rate of the products there, the most popular products, the return rates. That's all data that we very much control. And in the stores, particularly, you know, with the Chill Zero nicotine-free vapes, but also, you know, outside in our other products, again, we've seen challenges with this reporting in the past. I'm afraid people will still have to bear with us on that. But the intention, of course, once we have reliable data that is not going to mislead anybody, is for us to provide as regular an update as possible.
Okay, good. Yeah, we don't want to go back to the those days where we were basically guessing, because that didn't help anybody. In hindsight, at the time, we obviously all thought it was wonderful. Okay, do we expect to be cash positive this year?
Yeah, that is very much our target. We want to get to a position where ultimately, you know, we are able to wash our own face. And look, we're targeting cash flow positivity as soon as we can get there. I'd like to say we could get there by sort of autumn or winter this year. To be candid, some of our larger costs are not those related to operations. They're the costs of listing. But elsewhere in the business, we've really drummed down our costs. We've gotten ourselves into a position where we're really quite lean. Obviously, the next step is to really push revenue and for us to continue to, you know, build back up things like marketing and sales. Look, we're spinning our vapes up. Hopefully they, along with some other products, will be a cash cow for us. I'm not going to give a date for cash flow positivity because, again, no false expectations here. But look, that is our target. Our target is, you know, hopefully at some point this year. And the key is really building infrastructure that delivers at least as much as we spend on it in terms of sales and marketing.
Okay, so if we go to if we move off chill.com now and move to sort of the elephant in the room, which is the vapes. And especially the fact that there's been such huge press over the nicotine vapes and over the likes of the Elf Bar in the UK. And I think even in the States, there's been a lot of controversy about nicotine in the vapes. So we are going down the non-nicotine route and saying that this is a product that you will use. You will not get necessarily addicted to the nicotine. You might get addicted to the flavor, but that's a different game. So tell us how you envisage this thing working out, not just in the US, in the UK and in Europe.
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, we've seen tremendous appetite for vapes over the course of the last, you know, five or more years now, but really it's picked up massively since the market moved towards disposables. If you look at the grocer or any of those relevant kind of retail trade publications, you'll see that vapes have been by far their best seller and their biggest revenue driver over the course of the past sort of 12 months. That was certainly the case in 2022. What we're also seeing are stats that suggest that, look, there are a very significant proportion of the vaping population, somewhere potentially as high as, you know, a third, who've never picked up a cigarette, or if they have, they've never really gotten into habitual kind of smoking and nicotine use. They're using these vapes for their flavor. They're using them for their recreational and sort of relaxing qualities. I suppose it's oral fixation along the same lines as our smokes as they stand. And look, you know, the key really here, and what you'll see from Elfbar, from any of the other competitors in this space, albeit that we like to set ourselves apart, obviously, with the USP of nicotine free, is that people like colors, flavors, and no matter what people will tell you, that's adults who like that as well, not just, you know, the furore that we see around effectively the media drumming up concerns about youth vaping. So where does that leave Chill Zero? Well, look, our flavor, I will happily go on record as saying, is better than almost anybody else out there, if not the best in the market. The reason for that is because, again, we've not got any pretense in these devices. They're not labeled as some sort of wellness vitamin vape. They haven't got any kind of strange flavors. They're mass market. They taste good. We've got lemon, passion fruit, grapefruit, mint ice. We're looking at range extensions at the moment. The key is that they don't contain any nicotine in that e-fluid. And that means there's more room for flavor. And ultimately, yeah, I think we've got a great chance to deliver here something that the market is crying out for. Whenever we speak to people in the market, again, I was looking in the UK last week, discussing with some potential distributors, and there is tangible excitement about, you know, what we can achieve with these devices. That's not to say that it's going to be a rapid delivery of immediate profitability to the company. We still have work to be done there. But again, we have a unique selling point. We have a quality device. And again, there is no reason why we cannot deliver these in such a way that they capture the attention of the market right when Elfbar and other peers are putting their foot in it with the regulator.
Yeah, I think there's tangible excitement amongst Chill shareholders about vapes, never mind the actual people, because ultimately, what sort of profit margins are we looking at in terms of a vape? Can you give us an idea how much it costs to make, how much you're likely to sell it for, etc.?
Yeah, I'll be a little bit careful with what I say here, because look, I'm not going to give you our cost price or our exact margin on this call, because if one of our distributors or retailers is on the call, we'll have deleveraged ourselves completely from any future conversations and our margin will be nil. However, that being said, we've already got a margin baked into these products that is as good as, if not significantly better, depending on the channel we sell it through, than some of the products that we've looked at in the past. And you know, they had pretty good margins as it was. So I have absolutely no concerns about the margins on these products. They're very, very healthy. And we have, put it this way, we have room to discount as necessary. What I would also say is that, look, Chill Zero vapes are at a very competitive price point as things stand. We have a quality device. We have something that is moving in a market where other people are perhaps avoiding the area we're targeting. You know, here's a great example. In the UK, you cannot sell a nicotine vape with a tank size greater than 2 milliliters. We don't have a nicotine vape. We can therefore provide customers, consumers with much larger puff count devices. We can explore all kinds of different areas in relation to marketing, flavors, colors, puff count, sizes, device type. I've got probably about 40 different varieties of vape upstairs from the competitors that we're looking at. I've not yet tried one that is better than ours. And I'm not saying that just because they're getting me hooked on nicotine.
Yeah. And the other part around that, Callum, is how quickly, if demand was there, could you ramp up the vape production? And also, where are those vapes produced?
Yeah, so our manufacturing partner is based both in China and the United States. Of course, we've got a lithium ion battery in that device, and all of those are coming from China. But aside from that, looking at how we could ramp up production, I have very reliably from our manufacturer that We have no concerns in that regard. We could do 10,000, we could do 2 million, and the times, the lead times for those. And again, the relationship we have means that we're not going to have a problem in satisfying demand. And that's very important because, again, a competitor that I won't necessarily name on this call, but who is releasing press releases in the nicotine-free space, that they are fulfilling large orders in Egypt, for example, and I'm sure you can find them, has ultimately pulled themselves out of the US market at the moment because they simply weren't able to give the retailers and the distributors the lead times that they needed, the volumes that they needed. We're equipped for that. We've got the relationship. We're ready to go. So, you know, any retailers or distributors that are on this call, I shan't be telling you what our cost price is, but if you could message antonio@chill.com after this, that would be great.
Okay, very good. It's a good question that somebody posed as well about the disposable vape versus the sort of non-disposable vape. Have you got any thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I suppose apart from the fact that the market has very much gravitated towards the disposable vape, the reason that we have opted to go down that avenue is very simply that, look, in the United States, as a result of various legislation, as a result of the application of law by the FDA, any vape that is open system, and by that I mean a tank vape where you put your own fluid in, or a cartridge vape where you're attaching something like a Juul pod, those are classified as tobacco products, whether or not they contain tobacco or nicotine, which puts us into obviously very dangerous and expensive territory in relation to PMTA authorizations, which is what scuppered us ultimately in TFN synthetic nicotine. The reason that we have chosen a disposable device that contains no nicotine is because what you actually have, and this is not, you know, legalese loopholes, it is ultimately, you know, an aromatherapy diffuser. Well, you know, call it what you want. It's still a vape, but there's no way that someone can introduce their own nicotine into that device. And for that reason, that, you know, that there is very little regulatory oversight that can come our way at this time, and it would require ultimately the downfall of an industry for the FDA to switch from the position on restricting nicotine to the position they have on restricting, well, to another position on restricting the act of vaping. And I think anybody who has any familiarity with the United States will know that there would be very, very little appetite or patience and tolerance from the population in relation to a government body telling them what they can and can't do with their hand, mouth, and flavour.
Yeah, and what about the rumours in the UK that people, I mean, I think this is press-driven, but rumours in the UK that they will banish the one-use vape, if you like.
I think that if they were to do that, they would lose a tremendous amount of tax revenue. I think that's the easy point there. But again, aside from that, look, there's great work to be done by vape companies in rewinning the trust that they lost when they perhaps skirted around the law, whether accidentally or otherwise. I don't think that we're going to see a wholesale ban on disposable vapes. What we might see is increased restrictions on you know, what your devices can do, whether they're recyclable, whether they have any kind of sustainability credentials, how you can be socially conscious with those products. And again, look, we're getting ourselves prepared for that. We by no means are going to say that the chill device right now is as recyclable as a plastic water bottle. However, we are perhaps we're somewhat better than a lot of our peers. We are looking currently at ways that we can get into sort of sustainability to make sure that we do have a truly recyclable, or at least truly as sustainable as you can be with a vape device. And beyond that, again, I think it comes back to the way that these regulators think. How do they regulate? Well, typically it's the substance, nicotine. In this case, again, we don't have nicotine. So are they going to, again, ban all vaping? Are they going to ban aromatherapy devices? Are they going to, where next? It is a slippery slope. We will obviously monitor the situation. And of course, the other thing that we have learned from the synthetic nicotine challenge is that we are by no means overexposed to these vapes. We are nimble. We're ready to change our devices. We're ready to make changes with the manufacturer to whatever specification any regulator needs. And we can do that in a very cost-effective way.
And I mean, I suppose that really highlights, I mean, these questions really highlight that you really do need to be, you know, on the ball and squeaky clean in this situation. And chill.com needs to maintain that as well as obviously going down the vapes, because you know, in this environment, you just never know what can come up and bite you on the backside, basically.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I suppose with vapes, the current regulatory landscape on a federal level, as I say, is related to nicotine content, but you never know what a regulator is going to throw at you. Can I say that Chill is able to avoid any future regulation risk? Absolutely not, but it's about managing that risk. It's about making sure that we have contingencies in place that keep us ready to move and be nimble. We're much leaner than we have been for a very long time. And ultimately, as you say, look, we've got to make sure that chill.com is protected and its use is maximized such that we can generate as much revenue as we possibly can from it. At the same time, we want to keep ourselves in a position where we can, you know, jump around and do, you know, whatever really is needed to appease the regulators, stay on the market crucially, and stay selling when a lot of people will find themselves pulled off.
Very good. I think that's most of the questions covered now, Phil. What do you think? Are you?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple more in questions. There, but really just more about intentions really related to the vapes, about what challenges, advantages are you aware of between launching vapes in the USA and the UK, Europe? I think you've kind of skirted on that, but and then after the US launch, is it intended to go for UK next or Europe?
I think we've got an obvious nexus to the UK. We've already started some conversations about how we could bring the Chill Zero device to the UK. I've kind of hinted at that in relation to where we might deploy some capital in range expansion on flavors, but also puff counts and device specifications. I think, you know, looking at that expansion more generally, look, our strategy on a wider level is to expand Chill.com as a product distribution platform. And that is what the company is now. We're not a CBD company by any means. I don't want anybody to be confused by that as the future. We are a product distribution platform for natural functional ingredients, things like hemp-derived products, nootropics, mushrooms, hydration, wellness of all kinds. And this will require development work. It's going to require marketing. It's going to require us to look at, you know, which markets we want to be operating in. We've got interest from brands in Italy, for example, in South Africa as well. There is obviously that opportunity for us to extend into a number of geographies, a number of product categories and different areas of operation. I think it's important not to stretch ourselves too thin, of course. And I'm not suggesting that there's not a blue sky opportunity, because there really, truly is. But we've got to get the fundamentals right first, and that is building this site, making sure that it is able to tolerate the number of brands that we really aim to put on there, which is, again, my aspirations are markedly higher than perhaps the conservative target I'm giving. And look, there's no way to equally get past the fact that a lot of the market is suffering right now. That means that, look, when opportunity comes knocking for us in any one of a variety of ways, product categories, potential asset acquisitions or IP, we're ready to deal with that. We've got a long runway ahead of us. We've got, again, going back to, you know, not to repeat myself too much, but we have everything to play for.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously having 3 million plus in the bank is gonna help the game. And you know, from that point of view, the marketplace, as in this area of the marketplace, is basically falling apart for anyone who doesn't have cash right now.
Yeah.
So do you see there's potentially opportunities that Chill could benefit?
Yeah, very much so. And it's got to be the right one. You know, as a PLC, we're approached all the time by various businesses that either want us to acquire them, want us to, you know, do some kind of injection, want us to, you know, and we so far have not, you know, bitten on any of those because the time hasn't been right. And, you know, frankly, in some ways, the way that things transpired for Chill have been a blessing, because ultimately it's meant that we found ourselves really, you know, struggling but needing to turn something around at a time when it was still possible for us to do so. A number of companies that found themselves, you know, really at death's door since then have been unable to raise any cash, have been unable to pivot themselves away from, you know, potentially underperforming product categories. And they have not been able to recognize that, look, the gig is up on our model. It is time to change. We have done that. I think, for whatever you can say about Chill, to its credit, it has always been able to form itself into something that is at least somewhat viable, but in this case, I think has a great deal of opportunity. And again, there is no doubt that when, again, opportunity comes knocking, we will take it if the time is right and the the value proposition for our shareholders is right.
Very good. Yeah, so I suppose from my perspective as a shareholder in Chill, I'd like to thank you for the job you've done over the last 18 months. You know, obviously you took it over. It was in a mess financially and obviously revenue-wise, managed to get a raise away, which then allowed then all of these changes you've talked about. And now we've had two other significant raises, which now puts us in a very strong position. So yeah. I think well done. And you obviously must have had good PR at the time.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. You bought yourself an office with it. So there we go.
That was a joke.
PR. Yeah.
I'm just looking through the questions that people have typed here, if there's anything else that is sticking out. When will we see Chill Vapes in a UK store?
Yeah, as I say, not to give too much of the game away there, but what we're looking to achieve in the UK is to take advantage as best we can of the restrictions that are placed on peers that are outside of the nicotine free space. As I say, you cannot sell a nicotine vape in the UK that as a disposable that has a tank size of more than 2 milliliters. That translates to a puff count of around 600, which is why you'll see such prevalence of that in the market today. We do not have that restriction in relation to our nicotine-free vapes. And so what I would love to do is get to a position where we can release that into real strength, into what appears to be at this stage, a true void in the market. So again, to answer your question, to be a little bit more direct, as soon as possible, and we want to get them into stores this year.
Okay, so closing statement. What would you like to say to everybody? Obviously, pretty much everybody here is shareholder, I believe. So what would you like to say as a closing statement and what's ahead of us?
Yeah, thank you as always to our shareholders for the support. It has been, you know, a trying 12 to 18 months or longer than that, in fact, for anybody that's involved in the CBD market. We've seen a lot of our competitors in the listed CBD space collapse or some form of collapse over the last 6 months, which has been extremely unfortunate, and it's sorry to see. But Chill is still here fighting. We're grateful for you bearing with us. And again, we have everything to play for. That is the message that I want to leave people with on this, because we now have a great site, you know, a true blue sky opportunity with our vapes, with additional product categories that we're looking at. We've got so many brands that want to join. And look, put it this way, the improvements that we are making to the chill.com site, the traffic that we're seeing grow month on month, is even delivering, you know, additional sales to our pouch products, you know, things that we've traditionally struggled with. So I think that there is a great opportunity ahead of us. Of course, there are going to be times when we need to make very difficult decisions. And of course, there are going to be times as well where certain product categories need to be changed or modified. But look, we're ready to do it. We're now on, again, a long runway. And I can't see a world at this time where Chill does not find, you know, very, very significant success from at least one of the several business areas that we're targeting right now.
Very good. Well, on that note, we'll say thanks, Callum Summerton, CEO of Chill Brands. Thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, guys.
Well, that was good, wasn't it? It was. It's always good to hear Callum's insights, and Chill looks like a company that's on a completely different trajectory now, with Callum at the helm there, and it's very exciting with these vapes, so these nicotine free vapes. I think there's a real market for that, especially with, as you mentioned on the call, that the real awareness now in the media over here with the dangerous effects and the detrimental effects to health from these cheaper nicotine, you know, Elf Bar type vapes, the cheaper end of the vape. So yeah, for sure that there's a USP on those, and it looks very exciting.
Yep, trajectory is definitely on the up, isn't it? They've got cash in the bank, and in that sector I think that could make a massive difference, absolutely massive difference. And I know there's a huge amount of work going on in the background, so let's hope it comes to fruition. Let's hope we can have a run up to whatever figure is reasonable based on revenues this time rather than a non-reality which you did predict but at the same time, such is life. That's the way life goes sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, we've actually told a few porkies, didn't we, on the last Sunday Rose podcast by saying we wouldn't do another one during the Easter break. But I guess, you know, we're putting out this special over on the Easter Sunday for Chill. But we sort of thought we'd take 5 minutes, 10 minutes, just to give a kind of a wrap up of the week that was. It's been actually quite an exciting week, hasn't it? And we'll go over some of the main points and the movers and shakers. So what have you got on the list first off?
Yeah, the market's waking up is my first comment. Definitely some shoots of green coming out, I think, because we've seen some moves, some quite large moves, haven't we? You know, we've seen GST up 200%. We've seen Tech Minerals move. I mean, we had them on the show last Sunday, I think. We had them move up, 60-70% this week, finishing at 1.7, I think it was. And obviously, they've been sitting at a penny for quite a long time with the Macquarie Bank selling down. What else moved? Yeah, well, as I said to you, we would start to have a thing on called Bargain of the Week in terms of a share. And last week, I chose Genflow Biosciences as the Bargain of the Week, if you remember, if you listened. And it's up approximately 50% this week. And it's still a bargain, actually, to be honest with you. And we'll come on to the Bargain of the Week for this coming week after Easter at the end. So what about you, Phil? What's been moving?
Yeah, I mean, I was just looking at the sort of five-day movers since the last podcast, so since last Friday, and the best mover on the whole of the market was GST. We've had GST on before, haven't we? GS Technologies, the whole kind of like coin-based technology, and we've had Toe on, haven't we, in the past, and that one's moved. I mean, I've not really been following too much as to the rationale, but I know it dropped back to some really crazy levels, didn't it, over the last couple of months there. The latest release was on there was there was a few conversion of loan facilities and cancellations, etc. But their stablecoin sandbox application was filed. So I guess a lot of these, it's like anything, isn't it? You know, why is Genflow? I mean, obviously Genflow has moved well on the premise that they had out an update, didn't they, earlier on in the week, which was obviously very well received. It talked about a runway, obviously the 2 years that we've mentioned on the show in the past. They're well positioned to take advantage of the recent resurgence of interest in the longevity sector, being the first longevity company listed in Europe, high profile investors and a secure financial position. They've actually got runway now over 2 years until March 2025. I mean, how many companies in this with a market cap of, you know, around the 6 million mark have got that sort of runway and that freedom?
Probably Genflow and Chill right now, I think, and maybe Tech Minerals, but that's probably not even as long as that, but they should be cash flow positive by then. I don't know of any. I'm trying to rack my brains whether there's any others in the small cap market. Anyone who's got cash is going to do well at this moment in time. Of this, there is no doubt, because they can protect their position and they can probably pick up some bargains, I think.
Yeah.
Genflow slightly different because it's not necessarily going to pick anything up, but, you know, it's got grants galore. It's got plenty of cash, and, you know, what it does has been proved in mice and proved in dogs. Now it's got to be proved in humans. And really, that's where it came from anyway, because this thing is SIT6, isn't it? SIT6 is a human part of the gene. So, yeah, I think, I mean, this one could blow people's minds if it actually works. You know, you could be talking about like astronomical sums of money for effectively the elixir of life. You know, it's like bizarre.
Yeah, and you look at the price of it now, it finished Friday around the sort of 2.4 mark. Volume went pretty crazy, didn't it? On Thursday, Friday, it had some really good moves. You know, it went to market around 8 pence per share. It had a 52-week high of 9.95 pence. So look at it at 2.5p, and it's much further down the line. They've got the funding. They've got the grants, as you mentioned. And I just think that it's crazy value, even at this mark now. So for sure, it's a very exciting share to be involved with. So the other one that's moved is Saieta, and we've talked very briefly about it in the past. SED is the ticker. They are up on 5 days around 66%. they announced earlier in the week on the Monday that they had basically placed an American company called Urban Delivery Manufacturer placed a £5 million order for 3,000 of these e-drives, which is their heavy-duty e-drive system for EVs. So great sort of commitment to the company in these orders. And it has finally moved the share price, really. That was beaten down because we've kind of had our eye on that one for a while, haven't we, as it's dropped back.
Yeah, and we missed it. That's such a nature of it. Yeah, you miss some, you miss them.
Can't be in them all, can you?
No, you can't be in them all. But the other thing is what's happening with gold. Obviously, in the background, I think there's very, very big bullish movement going on in gold. We saw 2034 or 2032, I think it was, for gold. An ounce of gold. It's dropped back a little bit as we speak now, 200 or 2010, 2011. But there's lots of reports around that. I think there's a very good chance we're going to get a bit of a bull run, 10% bull run at least in gold in the next few weeks because of the uncertainty in the US over the dollar for a start, never mind anything else. You know, the dollar has fallen a little bit as well this week. But it's still got a long way to go, I think. I think we're going to see higher gold, lower dollar. And it looks like interest rates might not be going up in the US much more, if at all. And yeah, that's going to mean that there will be a flight from the dollar, probably. Especially when you listen to any of these podcasts that they're talking about now, that the BRICS have now taken on China. They've taken on Brazil, Egypt, which is another 110, 115 million people. All of these to try and create some sort of currency that will be backed by gold again, which, you know, if you're going to say, do you want the dollar or do you want a fractionalized currency that's backed by gold? What are you going to choose? What are you going to choose? And also the Chinese have agreed with the Saudis that they will pay now in yuan or real. So that does away with the dollar again in terms of the petrodollar. And the Americans are only waking up to this, I think. I think there is big, big shifts in the Russian and Chinese strategy that they're basically going to do their petro negotiations in their local currencies is basically going to wipe out huge amounts of dollars that are required. So, yeah, it's only going to take maybe another country like India or, you know, some of the big ones to move also in this thing, in this whole BRICS, which is what? Brazil, Russia, India, China. The Republic of South Africa, China now, Egypt. You know, these are huge nations in terms of the volume of people. And I see that that's going to move. So that brings us on to gold miners. I mean, we've got Conroy Gold, didn't really do very much, but it did pop up a bit on Friday. We've got Greatland Gold, again, it's going to have huge gold production probably starting around 12 months from now or maybe even a little bit earlier. But there's a lot of uncertainty over that Newmont Newcrest situation. But that's what's holding it back. But really, when you see the gold price going, anything with gold right now, you know, could do very well. I don't know what you think, Phil.
Yeah, but I mean, gold was quoted at 2020 an ounce at the close on Friday or Thursday, should I say? Because obviously, Good Friday was, you know, markets were shut.
Oh, yes,
but that was a really good move, and it has had a good run. The interesting one was, you know, you mentioned about the petro side of things. You know, there was a lot of hype around the fact that Saudi was going to halt its production to do the usual inflation. But actually, Brent oil was quoted around $84. So it didn't really seem to have much of an impact on it that they thought it was going to. What did you make of that move?
Yeah, well, it went up, didn't it? It went up about $5 or $6, I think, and then sort of settled back down again. But it has moved up. But I think people are countering the two things, aren't they? The fact that there'll be a reduction maybe in oil supplies, but they think actually that possibly the US is going into recession, so less of it will be required. You know, and we've seen the pound and the dollar move as well. It's gone, you know, when you think about the chaos we had only a number of months ago, was it? And at 105, you know, close to parity on the dollar, and now we're now at 125. And probably moving up. So yeah, a lot of things have started to change. That's a big swing when you think about it in a short period of time. So yeah, I think there's lots to happen. So I'm going to say to you what I think is now the bargain of the week for next week. For me, the bargain of the week right now, even though there are multitudes of bargains out there, as you well know, because this small cap market is just starting, people are just starting to realize how cheap everything is. But my bargain of the week for next week is Extract Resources. We interviewed Colin on Wednesday, I think it was, and it went out on Thursday. Basically, the market cap is completely covered, in my view, by Firbride gold production with a $1,200 margin on their 23%. And that's going to produce maybe $4 to $6 million a year in free cash flow for Extract. It's got a market capitalization of 12 million pounds. It's also got other copper assets and the smaller copper assets that they're going to be producing, already digging out ore, but really probably going to, by the end of this year, going to be in full motion, I would imagine. So all of the company is undervalued just on those two things. And then what I would say to you is, do you want to buy your lottery ticket? Because your lottery ticket is a 1.3 million tons of copper in the ground in Australia. And I think that is your lottery ticket. Everything else is already assigned in the market cap, and actually more in my view, but you have a lottery ticket. So do you want to buy that lottery ticket in Australia? Because if you do, I think you could be very happy. What do you think, Phil?
Yeah, I mean, well, obviously we spoke to Colin, didn't we, on towards the back end of last week, and we had an update from him in obviously Kikuyu in Zambia, and we talked about those assets there and how prevalent, you know, how much of it, you know, the potential that country has got itself. Obviously, we visited and we've seen it firsthand, and it is very exciting what's happening there in Zambia. But as you say, the Bushranger side of things, you know, it's like a free carry, isn't it? A lot of these, even from the potential from Fairbride in Mozambique, that kind of underpins the current market cap of the company, doesn't it, really? So there's not a lot priced in. And again, talk about stocks being absolutely beaten down. Just, you know, what is it? Is it apathy? Is it impatience of people who are willing to just give the shares away on the cheap and just, you know, don't want to hold for the long term? I don't know what it is, but we're certainly seeing it, aren't we, across all of the sectors, whether it be copper, gold, lithium, you know, all the spaces we've been saying. And now you just wonder, when is it going to pivot and when is it going to turn around? Because as you said earlier, we are starting to see signs that the market is waking up, that volume was there in the last two or three trading sessions. I'm feeling a bit more positive about it. A lot of people I'm talking to are feeling a bit more positive about it. Well, exactly. And but I hope it's not another false dawn. You know, we've seen it so many times where you see it, but I'm starting to see it across a lot more of the stocks, you know, not just one or two that are going on the sort of 50% movements in the day.
Yeah, the bottom and out, I think. And I mean, going back to this bargain of the week, you look at Extract. This time, this day last year, Extract Resources was trading at 7p. And people were very happy to buy that lottery ticket at 7p. What has fundamentally changed in Extract between now and then? The lottery ticket for Australia is a little bit smaller, okay? But potentially still as beneficial. Firbride and the gold is better. Zambia didn't even exist then, okay? Because it's been bought since then a year ago. So how can Extract be worth five times its current price, or 4.5 times the price it was a year ago, and now be worth what it is? It doesn't make any sense.
No.
You know, I mean, I think, you know, a fair price for Extract right now has to be, you know, significant amounts higher than it is now. I can't even say a price because it's like, it must be saying I'm rampant, but, you know, it's not far from where it was a year ago is a fair price for these assets, as far as I can see.
Yeah, well, let's hope the market wakes up to it. The other one this week, which had good news, sort of slightly muted response, but not bad nonetheless in the current market, was Predator Oil and Gas. Obviously, we've had Paul on in the past. They announced an MOU-3 drilling update, which basically it said that the Predator Gas Ventures Morocco branch has awarded the contract for the construction of the MOU-3 well pad platform and the improvement of access roads to the Moroccan company Skyivers Sahl. So that looks like things are obviously moving. The completion of permitting and survey requirements are expected to be finalized shortly. Civil works are due to start on or before the 10th of April. to facilitate the commencement of drilling activities prior to the end of May. So the exact timing of the start of drilling operations is obviously dependent on transit time. So we await that that news announcement. But ultimately, it looks like things are progressing there after the kind of slightly disappointing results from that kind of sludge, slurry, whatever you want to refer to it, that we talked about to Paul about,
which kind of drilling
hampered the previous drilling operations at MOU2. So yeah, I think we'll try and get Paul back on in the next next week or so after the Easter break. And if anybody wants to send us any questions that we can talk to Paul about, then please do that via email.
Yeah, and I suppose the last one I will talk about was not much happened this week, but Prospect Energy, we're going to have gas very shortly, and it's going to be a cash cow. And all of a sudden, you can buy this cash cow at half the price you could have done 6 weeks ago. So, fallen from grace, 17 or 18p it was sitting at, even though it actually people were buying it at 20, 21p. But let's say, for the sake of argument, 17, 18p, sitting at 19p, 25 million for assets that are probably going to be producing at least half of that in free cash flow very shortly. So, again, if you want a low-risk investment that really everything is already there, the gas should start flowing shortly. Why is it worth what it's worth? It doesn't make any sense. But again, this is the market we're in.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right, well, on that note, I'll say good luck against Arsenal at the weekend. Obviously, that's an interesting game. We've got Everton, so we've got the best part of Liverpool.
Yeah, indeed. I'm not even going to comment. I don't know. I hope we win for our sake, obviously, but I want Arsenal to win the league, not Manchester City. So, the way we're playing, I don't hold out a huge amount of hope, but I like to be surprised. So let's see if we can do them, especially at Anfield.
Good. Well, on that note, have a good Easter and we'll...
And we got the Masters this weekend. And I will say now, live on air, this time next year, I want to be in Augusta. I want to go and see it myself because it's been one of my dreams to go to Augusta. So I hope this time next year we're doing a small podcast from Amen Corner in Augusta, and we will see. So come on, Cam Smith. I want Cam Smith to win. Beat Rory McIlroy on the last hole of the 72. That would make me happy. Even though I do like Rory McIlroy, but he's been such a moaner over this live thing. But
good.
Come on, Cam.
All right. Very good. Well, on that note, have a good rest of the Easter weekend. Don't work too hard and I'll catch up with you next week.
Yeah. It's not Easter here, but I'll take it. Anyway.
And thanks for listening, everyone. And have a great Easter.
Happy Easter, everybody.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.